Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski is our guest. Thanks so much for being with us. Today's conversation with the mayor is happening right now, but the best way to contact us with future questions for the mayor is by sending an email to ask@wbaa.org. Good afternoon, Mayor Rozworski.
Hey, Emily, how are you today?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Well, I think like everybody, we're working very diligently through what's new waters for almost all of us. And so, but overall, things are going very well. So thank you for asking.
Absolutely. So, yeah, the health department started a new round of weekly press conferences yesterday, and you and Mayor Dennis were there. County officials, local hospitals are represented, and everyone had a chance to talk about their part, their role in the COVID-19 response here. And Tippecanoe County Health Officer Dr. Jeremy Adler said they're expecting the surge here to track with what's anticipated for the state, and that's a surge on or soon after April 16th. And Dr. Adler said yesterday, we should be home. And as of this morning, the Indiana State Department of Health reported 40 cases now here in Tippecanoe County. And the first thing you talked about yesterday was the arrival of warmer weather. We've had a few really nice days this week. Now, you wanted to remind people, for example, not to try to access playgrounds, which have now been taped off, or recreational equipment. You mentioned basketball courts, and how residents really need to remember that congregating in those spaces is an issue right now. And you said yesterday that people hadn't been complying with the signage, but they are now, for the most part, that tape has now been put up. So what are people still not getting here? There's a lot of information there about, you know, out there right now about what people should and should not be doing. So what's the disconnect still with some of this?
Well, I think, you know, as we said, as the weather gets warmer, it gets a little bit more challenging for people to keep some of those restrictions into their minds. And so, like I had indicated, we'd put out about 50 signs around the playgrounds and things like that. And that just, you know, unfortunately wasn't sufficient to get people's attention. So we did end up using the police caution tape around all of the playgrounds and all of the picnic shelters. And we locked all the bathrooms and did all those things that to try to stop people from, you know, congregating in places where they're going to be closer than 6 feet, and or by touching different things might leave the possibility to spread the virus in those areas. And so, you know, that's something that we really want to stress right now, because that's one of the, you know, tough things to do. I know people are, it's hard being at home all the time. It's hard not having those opportunities. But, you know, those playgrounds, those picnic shelters, those restrooms just simply can't be accessed. This next 2 weeks is 2 weeks are incredibly important, and that's just way too easy for people to congregate. So, you know, we've unfortunately had to lock the pickleball courts. We know that's hard for people, and we've locked all the basketball courts, and then where we didn't have fences around them or gates to lock, we've put stuff up on the rims on another 26 hoops, I think, that we have spread throughout the city to try to stop their use, and doing those things to help remind people that, you know, we know that you're going to get out a little bit, and the CDC has even said that some exercise, walking, using our trails, steps, but still practicing social distancing. And now, you know, looking at the regulations that there are, the recommendations to wear a mask, even if you're outside. So we do need to make sure that people, if you are still, you know, using our trails, please do the 6 feet. When you pass somebody, get off in the grass on both sides. You know, make sure that we're doing those social distancing activities that we need to do, or wear that mask to help cut down the potential for that exposure. And like I said, things have gotten much better. I've been on the trails a little bit myself, and I have a mask, and I walk in the grass just to kind of see. And, you know, the other night, for the most part, most people were doing that. And but we want to encourage people that these next 2 weeks are really important, and you can't get you can't get a false sense of security that just because you're outside, everything is okay. You still have to take, you know, precautions to ensure that we're not spreading this virus.
So looking at the temperatures that are coming up over the next couple of weeks, and again, even just walking around Purdue's campus the past 2 days, I saw far more people just kind of out and about or sitting on benches than I have in a while. And again, I mean, it was absolutely beautiful outside. But as those nice days, you know, keep coming closer together, are you concerned that even people who are adhering to these guidelines pretty closely right now just might find that harder and harder to do the nicer it gets outside?
Well, I mean, I think that's probably human nature, but at this point, we just can't let ourselves fall into that trap. As the governor said, and I actually made a new video yesterday that'll hopefully be out for everybody to look at by this Friday. You know, he made it clear that these next 2 weeks are incredibly important. In fact, I think he used the term, you know, there will be consequences for all of us depending on what we do or don't do. So good or bad consequences depending on how seriously we take this and what we can do in the next 2 weeks. And as you indicated, people are looking at the surge starting about the 17th. And so even though that is hard, that's what we have to keep reminding ourselves, reminding our neighbors, reminding our family members that this is an important time and we all need to stand up and be counted and do the right thing here and do our part. Because it's not, you know, just what is government doing, just what are the hospitals doing. When it comes to stopping the spread of a virus and working to flatten the curve, working to ensure that our healthcare systems are not overwhelmed and that the people that are really sick can get the treatment they need and we can take care of those people or stop them from getting it in the first place for people with underlying conditions that may need extensive medical care or the most vulnerable to pass away from this, that we're really doing this for each other. We're doing it for ourselves, for our family, our friends, and for our community. And we all have that responsibility to take the appropriate steps. And whether that is, you know, not sending three or four members to the grocery store, just sending one family member, or one member actually shopping for three different families. And I know some of the grocery stores are implementing some new things now on how many people can even be in the grocery store. A lot of places are putting marks on the floor now and even finding ways to separate the public, the customers, from the cashiers and things like that at different retails. And all of that is important, and all of that needs to happen. And if we have businesses where that's not happening yet, that needs to happen now, because we have to make sure in those places that we're keeping each other safe and they're not places just to browse. You know, people should be buying essential things only. Places should be selling essential things only, so we don't have people just browsing at things. And all of those things, you know, we need to be reminding each other that these next 2 weeks, and as we start into this surge, are incredibly important. And it's just a time that we all have to make that extra effort to do what's right for ourselves, our family, and for our community.
So Easter is this weekend for a lot of people. And we heard yesterday, it sounds like people still have questions about religious services, which people can't attend under the current stay-at-home guidelines, not in person. But now we're hearing about drive-in church services, you know, prayers planned for Good Friday. Dr. Adler said the health department would really prefer online or streaming church services, but he laid out some pretty specific guidelines for how those drive-in church services should operate if they happen. And I'm actually going to read these off. So sick and high-risk people should stay home. No one is permitted to leave their vehicle. Vehicle windows should remain closed for the duration of the service. There will be no restroom availability, no distribution of communion or wine or juice, and no collection basket. So those are pretty specific. Are you concerned about people complying with those rules, since apparently there have been so many questions about what is and is not allowed?
I think Dr. Adler and his staff and the media working to help get that information out is going to play a significant role in people complying. And I think what I've heard over the last couple of days, you know, there were originally maybe going to even be some virtual Easter egg hunts and some different things like that, and those things have been canceled. I think that the churches are working very hard to use the streaming that they can, and that you know, people will adhere. I mean, I would think that you know, without getting into a deep religious discussion, that, you know, people that do still want to go to those, and I'm a person that goes to church every week myself, and, you know, for our family, you know, I'll be 60 years old in June, and from my grandmother to my mother to my wife, who's taken over because I'm the oldest son, I can never remember in 60 years all of us not being together for Easter, but we're not going to be. We're not doing an Easter family celebration with, you know, even some of our children. We're keeping ourselves separated. We traditionally do have a big Easter egg hunt at our house, and so, you know, we're also making that difficult decision, and we'll be watching Mass through a streaming situation. We're making that difficult decision that under these circumstances, you know, we just shouldn't do that, and we think that's the appropriate thing to do, you know, depending on your faith. And again, you know, we're called to take care of each other. We're called to take care of the sick, and so this is what each one of us can do to not take a chance of spreading this virus, to make people sick, and to overwhelm a healthcare facility where people might not be able to get the care they need, because if we have too many really sick people. So I think, you know, in my mind, we're doing the right thing by doing it this way to ensure that we're helping take care of our neighbors. And I just hope that, you know, everybody looks at it from that direction.
You are listening to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg, and this week we're talking with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. Mayor, you were just talking about how local businesses have been complying with some of the newer stipulations in this most recent version of Governor Holcomb's stay-at-home order. And like you said, there are more specific guidelines surrounding limiting the amount of people in stores. People are being urged to provide curbside pickup. I mean, are you finding, or do you know if local business owners are finding it difficult or confusing to keep kind of shifting as these regulations kind of keep changing on them over the past couple of weeks?
Well, I think with time passing, I think actually the guidance is getting clearer and clearer, and you are seeing people take even additional steps to limit hours, set hours up for the most vulnerable populations to be there by themselves in small groups as opposed to open to the general public. People are putting, I think, more markings on floors and different things like that. So from what I can tell, more and more people are trying to do the right thing. And I mean, the governor was pretty clear this time that, you know, if you are a non-essential business, you should not be open. And the only way that you should be conducting business is either online or some type of curb service where somebody can carry something out, one person, give it to somebody, something like that. But you should not be open. And he made that very clear. And there are enforcement mechanisms within this new executive order with OSHA and the Secretary of State's office and different things like that. And he also made it clear that if you are an essential business and you're open, you know, you still are required to follow things in this order: social distancing, hand washing, disinfecting of workspaces, finding ways to, you know, if you can stagger employees, stagger shifts, all of those things that, you know, that even if you're an essential business, there are things that you are required to do. And so we've been putting that message out. I hit that pretty hard in my video that I filmed yesterday, that, like I said, hopefully will come out here on Friday, to really reinforce that in the community, that we all have a role to play. And, you know, I know it's difficult. I know those are not easy things to do, but we have to think outside the box. We got to make those sacrifices. And then, you know, whenever I think about how difficult that is, I always jump back to, well, it's not as difficult as the people that have actually lost their jobs, the restaurants that have had to close basically all the way except for a little carryout they can do, people that are unemployed now. You know, that there, we have some folks that are going through some really difficult times, and small businesses that are right on the edge. And so everybody is making sacrifices at this time and trying to figure out how to, we can keep things going. And so it's just, like I said, it's one of those times where we all got to step up and do the right thing to the best, the very best of our ability.
So, yeah, today the Department of Labor announced another 6.6 million people filed for unemployment in the last week. So when you add that to the preceding 2 weeks of numbers, jobless claims are over 16 million. And that does include jumps in Tippecanoe County numbers. Mayor Dennis and I talked about this last week, so I'm going to ask you, too. What do Lafayette employees need to hear and know right now about how the city might be supporting them?
Well, I mean, I think there is a couple things that we're doing that I think will be helpful. I mean, I'm not sure in this very moment, you know, because we did have some money come in just recently, like this week. We got notified that we'll have some extra CDBG money that we can use to potentially help some small businesses, maybe help individuals. I just got the letter just a couple days ago, the formal letter that we are getting the funds and the amount. And so we actually have a conference call this afternoon to look at putting a program together and what that might look like with some direct help. But the other thing that we're doing, I think, that people should know, and they probably do know, that by keeping the essential city services going, those things that allow the engineering department, water, wastewater, that there are still things happening in the community, and that our economic development group and myself, through go-to meetings and Zoom meetings, still are meeting with developers and builders and trying to work on projects for economic development, workforce development, downtown, new downtown opportunities. We're still doing all of our critical infrastructure projects that give capacity and for the roads, so that when this is over, we are well positioned to rebound as quickly as possible and to get people back downtown, get people back to work. No delays with roads or critical infrastructure that people would need, and that we position, you know, Tippecanoe County to be one of those shining stars like we are a lot, that we're open for business. We're rebounding quickly. This is a good place to invest. This is a good place to take a look at. Here's how we got through this situation, and be able to, you know, generate that enthusiasm and to see people see projects happening to help us recover as quickly as possible. And so, you know, we're continuing to do that. We had a virtual community public meeting last night. It's the first time that we've obviously ever had to do something like that, on the conversion of 3rd and 4th Street to two ways from one way, because we feel that can significantly help the downtown and the businesses along that corridor. And so we're continuing to work on that so we can keep that moving forward and that doesn't die and then, you know, have to kind of start over, and then it's pushed back even further. We did a Zoom meeting last night, and we're going to continue to do those things so we are positioned for recovery when we can get the go-ahead to, you know, get people back out into the community.
And I am going to ask you about that Zoom meeting, Mayor, but I also want to ask just more broadly, as you're having all of these meetings talking about the future of economic development in this city, I mean, realistically, how are you acknowledging what's happening right now and assuming that it is going to have some kind of impact on your ability to move forward?
Well, I mean, I think when we talk to people, we talk about things like we have managed our money well, and we have cash reserves, and we have some things like that. And so, you know, if people are concerned, can the city participate? Can the city finish projects? What's the city's bond rating? You know, how are your assets and things like that? You know, we can reassure them that we are in good stead here, and because the community works together, that allows us to get things done that, quite frankly, other places can't get done. And when we show them the capacity and things like the Murdoch Park booster station that's still on schedule and increases capacity, increases redundancy and things like that, you know, it's like, well, they're keeping, yes, they're able to do this, and they're not going to be behind. And so, you know, we try to reassure people with those types of things, which are facts, and keep promoting the community as a great place to live and work and play. You know, most people get it. They know this is going to be over someday. It's not going to last forever. Even in China, on Wednesday, they reopened up most of their, you know, activities and the subway and different things like that. And so people know that we are going to get through it. Life as we know it will return, maybe never quite the same as it was, and there be things that have been learned from this situation and technologies that were developed and things for the good that's happened because necessity has forced it to happen, that things won't, you know, quite be the same. And so, but we continue to promote that. We even put out some good news just on Facebook that we hadn't put out originally about the city of Lafayette received a very prestigious award from the Government Finance Officers Association. It's the highest level of financial accounting award that a government body can receive for the quality of their accounting and their audits and their transparency to their citizens. So, you know, we're using things like that to show people, you know, the level that we do things here and why this is still a good place to continue looking at investing in.
So the stay-at-home order right now ends on April 20th. And again, the surge here might come right before or around then. So, you know, what are you thinking about for longer-term preparedness, best practices for the city and for residents to continue mitigating virus spread, even in the absence of a specific stay-at-home order? And obviously, we don't know what the future holds sitting here talking right now, but what are you thinking about for the end of April into May? Are you having those conversations with people? And what are you thinking about right now for that?
Yeah, our, you know, here as city, as far as the city itself, as far as city operations, you know, we continually to evaluate our plans. We're already rotating people and different shifts. And as the weather changes, you know, things does change for us, right? Things that aren't terribly essential in the winter become more essential for us in the summer as we look at drainage situations, as weeds and grass begin to grow and things like that. And we can't let those areas flood or flood out businesses or homes, and there's different things we have to do on maintenance of sewers that you can only put off for so long. So we have to continually be reevaluating essential employees shifts and what those long-term practices look like. And, you know, we continue to do that, and we could do that into the foreseeable future. So from that, you know, from a city operations standpoint, I feel like we are in very good shape. You know, we look at our bandwidth all the time for having these meetings, having department head meetings through Zoom and go to these virtual meetings, all the people working at home. Our technology is just held up fantastic. We are nowhere near our capacity. We're not even at 50% of the capacity of what we could do if we absolutely needed to. And so we feel like we're in good shape here. And I think, you know, we've probably all learned some life lessons from this. I mean, nobody's probably going to look at things exactly the same. My guess is when it comes to washing your hands and different things like that are going to continue, and people are going to be much more aware and cognizant of, you know, what a virus can do or how quickly life can change, and how that we do need to be prepared and that we do always need to be looking at contingency plans and different things, because, you know, none of us have a crystal ball in life, and none of us know what tomorrow might bring, either in our personal, professional lives or as a community. And so I think it'll continue to reinforce the need for planning and upgrades and, you know, always being prepared.
So yesterday, a lot of you stressed the collaborative nature of the response to this, a lot of agencies working together. What would you say, first of all, some of the pain points have been, some lessons you've learned about how not to do things? And then, like you kind of alluded to earlier, what are some things that have been working that you might stick to when this is over? You know, hey, this new way we've been holding this particular meeting lately or handling this particular issue as all of this is unfolding actually works well, and maybe we should keep it when all of this is over.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one of the unique things about this, I mean, we've worked together here on economic development, community development, natural disasters such as tornadoes and floods, and, you know, different issues that come around from the environment and different things. But this one has been a little bit different for us in the fact that it is a health emergency of this nature and this magnitude. And some of us have been long enough that went through something, didn't get to this level, obviously, with the bird flu situation several years ago. But the reality is a health emergency like this is not something that, you know, we traditionally work towards as much as we do, you know, tornadoes, large storms, power outages, you know, floods, different things like that. So we have learned, I think, some lessons along the way of, you know, the cooperation is there, but this is a different situation, and it requires different equipment, and it requires different allocation of resources and access to resources and materials that are not nearly as readily available as some of the other things for some of the other, you know, emergencies that we might have, like a storm and a tornado, where getting the, you know, the water and stuff back on is directly up to us. That we have massive number of trucks and bulldozers and stuff that we can help pick up limbs and move trees and do all those kind of things. A lot of it we're going to need help, but a lot of it within, you know, our own abilities. Well, this one takes us outside that somewhat because of the need for things like N95 masks and ventilators, and that there is no vaccine and there was really no testing available for this. This is a unique situation that's made us think along those, you know, those lines about, okay, it's not just going to be natural disasters or different things like that. You know, this health side of it's something that we really need to, you know, focus on as well, because, you know, this is probably not the last time that something like this is going to happen.
So last night, like you were saying, Lafayette held a virtual public meeting to get input on a possible project that we've actually talked before about. Like you said, you're essentially trying to determine whether 3rd Street, which is one-way southbound, and 4th Street, which is one-way northbound, on either side of the courthouse in downtown Lafayette, should become two-way streets and what it would look like if that happened. So, yeah, how did that go last night? How was the meeting?
You know, I think it went, I felt like it went well. We had about 30 participants. Now, not all of those were just citizens, because there were obviously city representatives on the line, and then from our two consultants, MKSK and American Structure Point. But we know but there were some citizens on the line. I think we got 7 questions before it was over with that were emailed in, and I thought it was informative and not quite as good as being in person, but I thought overall it went very, very well.
All right. Thanks so much. That's our time for today. Mayor Rozworski, again, thanks for being with us. You can find this program at our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of West Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. Send us your questions to ask@WBAA.org or tweet us at WBAA News on Twitter. Thanks for listening and have a great rest of the day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.